evening, everyone. This is Lou Caravelli, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here it is. The last week of August, 2025. The summer is pretty swiftly approaching its end. Kids are going back to school. All kinds of activities are starting up again that have been suspended during the summer when everybody is on vacation. So here we go. We're going to lead off tonight with an article from the Washington Times. As many of you have heard on the radio, this is the fourth anniversary, this Tuesday, August 26th, of the bombing that killed 13 Americans and injured a great many more and killed others who were not Americans at the Afghanistan airport in the disastrous withdrawal during the Biden administration of U.S. military. So let's lead off with this article by Kerry Pickett, Washington Times. It appeared Monday, August 25th. Trump signs proclamation honoring service members slain in Abbeygate attack in Afghanistan. President Trump Monday honored U.S. military members killed in the Abbeygate disaster in Kabul, Afghanistan, 4 years ago. Flanked by family members of 13 U.S. service members, 11 Marines, one Army psychological operations specialist, and one Navy corpsman, Mr. Trump signed a proclamation paying tribute to their fallen loved ones on the anniversary of the suicide attack at Kabul Airport that also killed at least 170 Afghans and wounded another 18 American military personnel. Mr. Trump said, quote, "This is a very special group of people. I've been with them from the beginning. Abbeygate, you know, Abbeygate, one of the dumbest days in the history of our country by a previous administration, getting out of a place that we shouldn't have been in," Mr. Trump said. He went on, "At a minimum, they should have been at Bagram," that was the Air Force base, "the big airfield where we have hundreds of acres around it. Nobody's going to get near it," the president said. Mr. Trump said the family members of the fallen had been with him, and he, quote, "has been with them 100%, and we meet more than once a year." Mr. Trump noted he believes the disastrous pullout from Afghanistan by the Biden administration helped trigger the war between Russia and Ukraine. The suicide bomber struck as crowds of Afghans were clamoring to get into the airport, while U.S. troops were providing perimeter security in the chaotic final days of America's withdrawal ordered by the Biden administration. Mr. Trump said, quote, "Vladimir Putin saw how incompetent our military was under Biden and under former Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley. And all these dopes, these dopey people, that's not our military. You see what our military is now. We knock the hell out of people if we have to," unquote. Vice President J.D. Vance said the proclamation is an acknowledgement of the Abbeygate slain service members, and it's a, quote, "rectification of Iran." He went on to say the fact that President Biden lost your loved ones through incompetence, but never acknowledged it, and your government never actually put pen to paper to say, "We're grateful for your sacrifice. We correct that wrong today," Vance said. And Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said the Pentagon, quote, "needs to answer," unquote, "for what happened at Abbeygate 4 years ago. And an investigation has been launched which showed the need for a more detailed probe than what was previously investigated during the Biden administration." Mr. Hegseth said Pentagon's spokesman Sean Parnell, an Afghanistan veteran, is now spearheading the probe. And another quote from Pete Hegseth, "I would anticipate completion of the probe by the middle of 2026. That's how thorough of a review we're doing. Hopefully a little bit sooner, but we're going into everything and understanding what happened," unquote. 4 years ago. Now, switching gears, We have an article from LifeSite News. James Dobson, influential pro-family leader, dies at 89. This appeared August 21st. And by the way, before I read this one, the article I just read about the Abbeygate disaster appeared in the Washington Times, and the date was Monday, August 25th. So now about James Dobson. Dr. James Dobson, a leading figure in the pro-family movement for several decades, died on Thursday at age 89. Dobson, a psychologist and evangelical Christian, was an outspoken advocate on a wide range of pro-life and pro-family issues, such as opposition to abortion, same-sex marriage, and pornography. He founded Focus on the Family in 1977 and the Family Research Council in 1983. He was a radio broadcaster, author of dozens of books on family, marriage, and parenting, and he was also an advisor to multiple U.S. presidents. And here's a quote, "Few people have had the positive, Christ-honoring impact upon the family as Dr. Jim Dobson. His legacy will be lasting," said Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. And he added, quote, "In every sphere in which he engaged as an author, psychologist, teacher, policy expert, and national leader, he served the cause of Christ and proclaimed God's faithfulness to his people. He brought to public policy a new focus on the timelessness of family," unquote. Dobson was born on April 21st, 1936, in Shreveport, Louisiana. His father, grandfather, and great-grandfather were all ministers in the Evangelical Church of the Nazarene, although he himself never became a minister. He earned a doctorate in psychology from the University of Southern California in 1967, and he was a professor of pediatrics at his medical school for over a decade. He is survived by his wife, Shirley, and their two children, as well as two grandchildren. So again, the title was James Dobson, influential pro-family leader, dies at 89, LifeSite News, August 21st. Now we switch to the topic of crime. From Fox News, Trump to sign executive order to eliminate no cash bail for D.C. suspects. The move targets progressive criminal justice reforms that Trump calls central to crime problems in major cities. This appeared Monday, August 25th by Stephen Sarais, again in Fox News. Trump's D.C. crime crackdown is extremely successful, U.S. Marshals Service director says. President Donald Trump is planning to sign an executive order on Monday that aims to eliminate cashless bail for suspects arrested in Washington, D.C., a White House official confirmed to Fox News. In addition to the D.C.-focused executive order, Fox News confirmed that Trump is also expected to sign a second executive order with the goal of ending cash bail nationwide by threatening to revoke federal funding for jurisdictions across the country. The New York Post first reported on the separate nationwide executive order. Trump spoke about ending the no-cash bail policy earlier this month, though hinted that he was going to do it through Congress using Republican votes. Quote, "because the Democrats are weak on crime, totally weak on crime." And he went on to say, "every place in the country where you have no cash bail is a disaster." And Trump said that at the time, and specifically he was naming New York and Chicago. He went on, "I mean, bad politicians started it, bad leadership started it, but that was the one thing that's central, no cash bail. Somebody murders somebody, they're out on no cash bail before the day is out." No cash bail is generally considered a progressive approach to criminal justice. As such, reforms have been implemented in states like New York. Data shows that bail elimination can lead to higher recidivism rates, the Data Collaborative for Justice, concluded in February 2024 that, quote, the elimination of money bail increased recidivism for people charged with nonviolent felonies with recent criminal history and with a recent violent felony arrest, while it decreased recidivism for people charged with misdemeanors and people with no recent criminal history, unquote. New York City Mayor Eric Adams, a former police officer, has been a strong critic of the state's cashless bail law, which was enacted by former Governor Andrew Cuomo in 2019 and perpetuated under his successor, current Governor Kathy Hochul. Adams, who has argued Cuomo-era bail reforms drove up recidivism rates, resulting in offenders repeatedly being arrested and released back on the streets, now faces the former governor in November's mayoral election. Democratic Socialist candidate Zoran Mamdani, who was seen as the front runner in the mayoral race after his June primary win, has promoted radical initiatives such as eliminating all cash bail and abolishing prisons. Earlier this month, the Trump administration rolled out a plan aimed at making Washington, D.C., in his words, safer and more beautiful, as his administration doubles down on efforts to address crime and a growing homeless population in the nation's capital. On Friday, Trump said he was considering sending the National Guard to Chicago, calling the Windy City a mess, though the White House has not offered additional details of the potential deployment of troops to Chicago. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson later called the Trump administration's efforts, quote, uncoordinated, uncalled for, and unsound, unquote, seemingly snapping back at the president, who called him grossly incompetent earlier in the day. Johnson added, the city has reduced homicides by 30%, robberies by 35%, and shootings by almost 40% in the last year, suggesting federal action would deteriorate trust. The city, which struggles with poverty and gang activity, has a crime rate higher than the national average. All right. I'll just comment that I heard on the news this morning that there are a lot of deaths and shootings in Chicago over the weekend. So I think the mayor of Chicago is painting a rosy picture that is not there. This, again, was from Fox News, dated August 25th. And the headline said, Trump to sign executive order to eliminate no cash bail for D.C. suspects. And apparently, what the president is doing, this is Lou commenting now, what the president is doing is working, because the crime in D.C. is way down. Makes you wonder, why couldn't the present leaders in these big cities, just about all Democrats, why couldn't they have done some of those same things to reduce the crime? Oh, is it just because they don't want to offend their left-wing base? I guess that's it. Well, here's something else from Fox News on a different topic. The title, The Warrior Ethos Effect, Why Female Enlistment is Surging Under Trump. And the subheadline says, Army exceeds recruiting goals by 10% as Defense Secretary Hegseth implements merit-based standards. This is by two representatives, Anna Paulina Luna and Sherry Biggs, both U.S. representatives, working for Fox News, are submitting their article to Fox News. This was published August 22nd, 2025. And they say, for years, we've watched with frustration as Democratic administrations pulled America's military away from its core mission and dragged it into a culture war that it never asked for. As a veteran and a current service member of the U.S. Armed Services, we have seen firsthand how the military was transformed under the Biden administration into a progressive playground where identity politics took priority over readiness. Standards were weakened. Language was policed. And under the banner of diversity, that's in quotes, diversity, the integrity and morale of our military was quietly undermined. It's no wonder. Military recruitment hit historic lows, especially among women. When the Pentagon began forcing female service members to share locker rooms, showers, and sleeping quarters with biological males, it sent a loud message. And that was, women's safety and privacy were no longer priorities. Even merit-based advancement, a core principle at the heart of any effective and lethal military, was replaced with divisive quotas and radical social engineering. But that tide is turning under the strong, unapologetic leadership of President Donald Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. This year, nearly 7,300 more women have enlisted in our armed forces compared to the same time last year. That's not just a statistic. It's a clear and resounding statement. American women are coming back to the military, and they're doing so under the Trump administration. This surge is the result of a leadership philosophy rooted in a warrior ethos, fairness, and unshakable standards. Secretary Hegseth has made it clear, women are welcome to serve in combat, but they will meet the same demanding physical and mental standards as their male counterparts. That's not discrimination. That's respect. Equal treatment means equal expectations. The results speak for themselves. The Army has already exceeded its recruiting goals by more than 10%, and every service branch is on track to meet or exceed their numbers. Why? Because the American people are seeing a military returning to the purpose, fighting and winning wars, not pronoun briefings and DEI seminars. As a veteran and a current service member, we've lived the difference between mission-first leadership and agenda-first leadership. When troops trust their commanders and believe in the mission, morale rises. Standards rise. Readiness improves. That's the culture we're seeing return today. In Congress, we've also proudly supported real investments in our troops, including a 10% pay raise for junior enlisted personnel. These young men and women are the backbone of our force. They shouldn't have to choose between serving their country and putting food on the table. Of course, the media doesn't like this narrative. They'd rather spin up outrage and falsehoods. But strong values like faith, family, and patriotism have always been part of what makes the U.S. Armed Forces exceptional. It's no coincidence that as leadership returns to those values, enlistment is rebounding. To the young women of this country, you are needed. If you are strong, tough, disciplined, and ready to serve something bigger than yourself, the United States military is a place where you can thrive. You'll be respected. You'll be expected to perform. And you will be part of a force that values their contribution, your contribution. Not because of who you are, but because of what you bring to the mission. The rise in female enlistment is proof that America's women are watching. And they're responding to real leadership, not the hollow pandering of President Joe Biden and the Democratic Party, but the return of strength, moral clarity, and unapologetic patriotism. With conservative leadership at the helm, the U.S. is getting back on track, and we're proud to stand with the women leading the way. And it gives a comment at the end, Representative Sherry Biggs, a Republican, represents South Carolina's 3rd Congressional District. And a disclaimer, Representative Sherry Biggs is a lieutenant colonel in the Air National Guard. The views expressed in this op-ed are her own and do not reflect the official policy or position of the U.S. Air National Guard or the Department of Defense. And the other co-author, Representative Anna Paulina Luna, a Republican, represents Florida's 13th congressional district. She's a veteran of the Air National Guard. And that appeared in Fox News on August 22nd, 2025. And the title, if you want to look it up, is The Warrior Ethos Effect, Why Female Enrollment is Surging Under Trump. Well, if you like this program, I would love to hear from you. My name is Lou Caravelli, and if you'd like to write to me, the address is Lou Caravelli, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip is 21609. That's Lou Caravelli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. So we'll get a few of those books, and I'll talk more about that in a minute when it kind of ties in with one of my articles. Got some more information on a variety of topics today. Let's see now. The next one is just kind of some general advice. This also appeared in Fox News. U.S. warns American travelers about terrorism, crime, kidnapping, and popular vacation destination. And this is by Stephanie Price, Fox News. And as I said, August 22nd. I think I said that. At any rate, it's August 22nd, 2025. Former DEA Special Agent Michael Brown warns that Mexico's popular tourist zones may look safe, but behind the beaches and resorts, cartels and predators pose serious threats to unsuspecting travelers. The U.S. State Department has issued an undated travel advisory for Mexico, warning Americans about potential dangers in the popular vacation destination. Released on August 12th, the advisory raised Mexico to a level 2 alert, urging travelers to, quote, exercise increased caution, unquote, due to the threat of violent crime, including terrorism, kidnapping, and other criminal activity. U.S. officials also warned that in certain areas, they may have limited ability to assist travelers in emergencies. Quote, violent crimes such as homicide, kidnapping, carjacking, and robbery are widespread, the advisory notes. And it also says there is also a risk of terrorism, violence, I should say it this way, terrorism violence, including potential attacks, unquote. The alert comes as Mexico continues to attract millions of international travelers. According to Road Genius, in 2024, Mexico received approximately 45.04 million international tourists, including about 13.5 million visitors from the United States, making it the top international destination for U.S. travelers. Popular hotspots include Cancun, Tulum, not sure I'm pronouncing that right, T-U-L-U-M, Cabo San Lucas, and Mexico City. Despite the heightened warning, one expert emphasized that Americans don't necessarily need to cancel their trips. Robert McDonald, a retired supervisory Secret Service agent and a lecturer in criminal justice at the University of New Haven, told Fox News Digital the advisory should be viewed as a reminder rather than a deterrent. He said, quote, it's really a lot of situational awareness, a lot of common sense, McDonald said. He went on, if you can avoid traveling into a hot zone, do so. Otherwise, just be smart about your surroundings, unquote. With more than 20 years in executive protection and intelligence, McDonald has coordinated security for U.S. and foreign dignitaries. He said that while most resorts are generally safe, venturing off property is where the risks arise. McDonald explained that resorts and cruise lines work hard to manage reputations for safety, often downplaying incidents to reassure guests. While most tourist hubs remain stable, travelers who leave resort areas may face exposure to cartel activity, gang violence, robbery, or drink tampering. Mrs. Liu, in saying this, I never would have thought that, although I realize that people have had their drinks spiked to knock them out so they can be robbed, or in the case of females, to have sexual crimes committed. Interesting. Well, going on, here's some other words from Mr. McDonald, and that was Robert McDonald. He says, stay in the resort. Enjoy what's on the property. Don't go off. That's where problems can occur. Unquote. McDonald also highlighted how resorts and cruise ships alike are motivated to maintain a reputation for safety, even if that means underplaying incidents, adding that guests can still have safe and enjoyable vacations by being cautious and limiting exposure to risky situations. He said, resorts don't want problems advertised because it hurts business, but dangers exist once you step off, unquote. According to Mr. McDonald, safety largely depends on where you're going. He went on to say, tourist-friendly areas haven't seen a significant spike in violent crime, but you should avoid areas dominated by drug cartels or where violence is common. Unquote. For those still planning trips, McDonald recommends the following precautions. First, avoid street taxis. There have been reports of extortion involving unregulated taxis. Instead, book transportation in advance through reputable companies offering vetted services. Stay on resort grounds. Resorts typically provide 24-hour security. If you plan to leave that property, avoid going out alone or after dark. Stay vigilant. Avoid distractions like using your phone while walking. And keep an eye on your drink when out socializing. Dress modestly. Avoid wearing flashy or expensive jewelry that could draw unwanted attention. And this is Lou again speaking. Yeah, I think expensive jewelry would be a big tip-off. Obviously, that kind of sends a signal, is somebody that's worth robbing. And expensive clothes can certainly do that, too. And there was something else I was going to comment upon. Yeah, I was going to say a lot of these pieces of good advice would work well in American cities as well. A lot of people say, even in Washington, D.C., which is one of the reasons the president has clamped down, they don't feel safe, especially at night. I wouldn't go out walking in a big city at night to save me. And I'll say this, is not altogether new. I can remember my dad being told by one of his workers, a minority worker, because my dad was a machine shop foreman in the Boston area. This man, who liked my father very well, told my dad, do not go into so-and-so place in the Boston area, actually within the city, one district within the city, especially at night. And he said, I can remember him saying, too, don't leave your hand dangling out the window with a valuable watch on, because somebody's going to come along. Before you know what's happened, they will pull that watch right off your hand, right off your arm, and be long gone. So some of these things are good advice anywhere, not just Mexico. Any city of any kind, including those in the USA. Well, now, resuming some of the other good pieces of information, good pieces of advice, he said, communicate safety. Check in with people back home and travel with trusted groups. More good advice. Be prepared for emergencies. Always know exit strategies and how to, quote, get off the X, unquote, which just means escape dangerous situations quickly. That's another good thing I'll comment on. It's Lou. Keep in touch with people at home. They should know. He should, I would think, be communicating with your friends and relatives back home at least daily so that they know you're okay. And if you don't communicate, they should be on the alert to notify authorities. I don't know how that exactly would work, but it seems to me like common sense. And finishing up now, be prepared for emergencies. I guess we said that already. Know the exit strategies. In other words, know how to get out of there fast. And Mr. McDonald stressed that these tips apply not only in Mexican resorts, but to any crowded environment. He went on to say travelers must be vigilant, whether at a resort, a ball game, or any crowded venue. It's important to always identify exit routes and have a plan to get off the X. That's how he phrases it, if danger arises, since law enforcement often arrives only after the fact, McDonald said. Ultimately, he advised travelers to balance enjoyment with preparation. He went on, enjoy the trip, but don't let your guard down. Safety relies on awareness, preparation, and smart choices. And he said a little bit of preparation, knowing where the consulate, police, or hospital are located can make a big difference. So plan ahead and always be ready to remove yourself quickly from unsafe situations. This again was an Fox News, and they comment that Stephanie Price, the author of this article, is a writer of Fox News Digital and Fox Business. She covers topics including missing persons, homicides, national crime cases, illegal immigration, and more. And this appeared in Fox News on August 22nd, 2025. Now, I'm about to read something having to do with vaccines. We've talked a lot about that over the last 5-6 years. My late wife, Elizabeth, before her death, talked many, many times. And she and I wrote the book that is still available from me, COVID and Coming Chaos. We have a few more copies still. I'll send it to you for no charge, free. All you have to do is just ask me. It'll be helpful if you give us a little donation, but I'm not requiring that. If you don't have the money, we'll still send you the book. And to get that book, COVID and Coming Chaos, which is a kind of history of what went on in the first couple of years of the COVID crisis, just write to me, Lou Caverly. Again, you spell my last name C-A-V as in Victor, E-R as in rodeo, L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And if you could send us a little donation, I'd appreciate it very much. Things get a little slack in the summertime. Everybody's busy. I certainly understand that. But if you could make a little donation to help us keep the program on the air, would be much appreciated. And of course, this program can be heard on shortwave and on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio's internet website, WWCR. Let me say that a little more slowly, WWCR.com. And if you want to hear us on shortwave, if you have access to a shortwave radio, generally, with the coming of fall, the reception gets better. It's Thursday evenings on a frequency of 4.840 megahertz at 8 p.m. That's Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I should add, on 4.840. And the program repeats Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Again, on WWCI.com or... Let me think about the frequencies. Got to stop and think now. What's the frequency Saturday morning? I believe it's 7490 megahertz. And there are some other ways to hear it. Global Star. If you have access to Global Star Radio, you can hear it there. You can hear it k-starTalkRadio.com and Kingdom Star Radio. And if you go to our website, you can find these. If I said that a little too quickly to get that all down, just go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com. Well, now, I said I was going to talk about vaccines. We wrote the book 3 or 4 years ago, but being a more or less of a historical document, it's still, I think, very interesting and timely and something you can hang on to. Because even now, this controversy is continuing. Here's something from LifeSite News, August 21st. That would have been, I believe, last Thursday. RFK Jr. slams American Academy of Pediatrics for recommending vaccines created by top donors. And the subtitle says, the American Academy of Pediatrics continues to push the harmful COVID shots to children, despite its philanthropic fund-taking, massive donations from Pfizer and Moderna. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. called out the American Academy of Pediatrics, the AAP, for recommending vaccines, including the dangerous COVID shots created by top corporate supporters, without disclosing its conflict of interest. The AAP recently made headlines for releasing its own recommended childhood vaccine schedule independent. Get this now, this is Lou speaking, independent of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, which was recently overhauled by Kennedy, the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. The notable difference between the two schedules is that the AAP, again, that's the American Academy of Pediatrics, is recommending COVID shots for healthy children, whereas the CDC is no longer recommending these experimental mRNA shots for healthy children and pregnant women. Kennedy shared on Tuesday a screenshot from the AAP's webpage showing some of its top donors are Merck, Moderna, Pfizer, and Sanofi. Not familiar with that last one. Major vaccine manufacturers. Other vaccine makers like GlaxoSmithKline make considerable donations to the AAP as well. This is Lou speaking. Could we call those bribes? It certainly sounds like it to me. Well, back to the article. The four first companies listed. Now, let's go back to those again. That would be Merck, Moderna, Pfizer, and Sanofi. According to Mr. Kennedy, quote, make virtually every vaccine on the CDC recommended childhood vaccine schedule, unquote. While he acknowledged that the AAP is free to make its own recommendations, he called for it to, quote, follow the lead of HHS and disclose conflicts of interest, unquote, so that Americans may consider whether the AAP is serving the public health interest or the, quote, commercial ambitions of AAP's big pharma benefactors, unquote. Kennedy accused the AAP of anger against the CDC for eradicating corporate influence in decisions over vaccine recommendations. He referenced his dismissal of all 17 previous members of the CDC's top vaccine advisory panel due to the finding that they were routinely advising on products from pharmaceutical firms with which they had financial ties and had been issued conflict of interest waivers from the CDC. Now, this is Lou speaking. Those of you listening out there, does that sound right to you, that people that are supposed to be watching out for our health are being given waivers so that they can be buddy-buddy for the big pharmaceutical companies? That just doesn't ring right to me. Definitely rubs me the wrong way. I think it does you too. So I would certainly support Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in firing those 17 previous members. Going on now, while the CDC vaccine schedule so far remains mostly the same since the appointment of 8 new members of the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, its June 25th meeting has launched new work groups to study these approved vaccines and the cumulative effect of the child and teen vaccine schedule. Among other recommendations, the June ACIP, again that was the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, the June ACIP meeting advised the removal of thimerosal, a neurotoxic mercury-containing preservative currently used in flu shots. Well, this is Lou again. Let me interrupt. Those of you that have been listening to this program for several years know that my wife, Elizabeth, before her death, many, many times spoke out against this thimerosal. And all the drug companies said, oh, we don't use that anymore. Don't worry about it. It's not in the vaccines. Well, you know what? This says it is. At least in the flu vaccine, and I strongly suspect in other vaccines as well. Going on now in Kennedy's Tuesday ex post, he also urged the AAP to clarify that, quote, recommendations that diverge from the CDC's official list are not shielded from liability under the 1986 Vaccine Injury Act, unquote. Kennedy has frequently stressed the importance of ridding U.S. health regulatory agencies of what he calls corporate capture, a term he uses to describe the common phenomenon whereby these regulatory agencies receive significant funding from pharmaceutical companies and subsequently rubber-stamp their products without meaningful review. Well, Elizabeth, when she was living, and I strongly contended that the CDC and FDA rubber-stamped the COVID vaccines. They were produced in record time, given what we felt was inadequate testing. And it's come out in recent years, even in the mainstream media, they'd like to cover up everything about this, that these vaccines have caused a great deal of harm. So we were way ahead of the game with our little book, COVID and Coming Chaos. Again, if you want that book, write to me. Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Now, if you listen to the news, or at least Fox News anyway, on the TV or radio, you will have heard a lot about Cracker Barrel. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that now. Elizabeth and I used to like to go every so often to Cracker Barrel. It was a little bit of a distance for us to travel, about 35 miles, almost to the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. And it was at any time, right near mealtime, noon or, let's say, 5 to 6 p.m., it was always very busy. This particular Cracker Barrel, which was right on the eastern shore side of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge that goes from Annapolis over to the Maryland Eastern Shore. We loved it there, but it was very crowded. You have to kind of time it for off the rush hour. And we always liked their gift shop, too. They had all kinds of neat little things in the gift shop, even some old-fashioned candies that were pretty good. But, like all good things, they seem to have come to an end. Well, maybe not an end, but a stumbling block. Trying to make it better, they may have just made it worse. Well, let's see what some of the critics say. Here's a couple of articles. I think both of these are from Fox News, and I'm sure there are many others out there. This first one says, says Cracker Barrel dismisses critics as vocal minority, while rival restaurant adds to the backlash. This is by Peter Burke, Fox News, August 22nd. Cracker Barrel Old Country Store customers have been vocal on social media about their disdain for the recent transformation of the Tennessee-based restaurant chain. These voices grew even louder after Cracker Barrel unveiled its new logo this week. The new logo does away with the illustration of an old man leaning against a barrel while seated in a chair. Instead, the text-only logo uses a new typeface against the familiar gold background. Cracker Barrel also rolled out a new menu that includes breakfast, lunch, and dinner options and, quote, refreshed restaurant remodels, unquote, as part of its All the More campaign, according to a news release. And this is Lou speaking again. This has me curious. If it wasn't so far to drive, about 35 miles, I'd zip right up there today and check it out and see if this new sign is up on this particular Cracker Barrel store. And what do they mean with the redecorating stuff that they're going to talk about? Well, I'll get a little bit more of that in a few minutes. I'd like to see it firsthand, but I'm not sure I'm quite up to the trip, at least not today. And if I go now, I'll probably land there right about when it's at its busiest. Well, it goes on to say, although Cracker Barrel Chief Marketing Officer Sarah Moore touted the changes as, quote, bringing fresh energy, thoughtful craftsmanship, and heartfelt hospitality to our guests, unquote, many people on social media had a far different perspective. Let's see what it says here. Benny Johnson, a YouTube content creator and conservative influencer based in Florida, wrote on X, the new logo is, quote, absolutely horrible, unquote. When will they learn, he added. The responses were resoundingly negative. One person wrote, not a cracker or a barrel in sight. Another wrote, it's worse than horrible. It's generic. And someone else noted, massive downgrade. And still another said, they literally just ruined the entire thing. Change is back. And still another, this logo change feels like a war crime, unquote. Even Steak and Shake has something to say about the Cracker Barrel backlash. The Indianapolis-based burger chain wrote in part on its official X account, quote, this is what happens when you have a board that does not respect their historical customers or their brand, unquote. Fox News Digital reached out to Shake and Steak, Steak and Shake for comment. Others pointed out that Cracker Barrel seems to have lost its focus on food. One person commented, they have been changing the menu and ingredients lately. It's not country cooking anymore. Another said the food has become substandard for a while now. Ms. Moore told Fox News Digital in May that Cracker Barrel has been, quote, listening to what the guests, listening to what the guests ask for. And examples of what the guests ask for are things like spaces that feel brighter, that feel less cluttered, more booth seating, more seating options so our guests are more comfortable while they are dining with us, unquote. She said fan favorites like the rocking chairs, peg games, and antiquities on the wall aren't going anywhere. She said the things you love about us will stay. That's a little bit more, but I think I'll stop there. Give you just a couple of comments from another article, so we have time for a few other things. This was also from Fox Business. That first one on Cracker Barrel was by Peter Burke, August 22nd. This one is also on Cracker Barrel, this one August 24th, by Stephen Serace. And it talks about a Cracker Barrel board member who's under fire for his DEI background. And so conservative activist Robbie Starbuck says Cracker Barrel's logo redesign and progressive endeavors are, quote, brand destruction 101, unquote. And they talk about one of the board of directors members, Gilbert Davila, joined the restaurant's chain board in July 2020 and is also among its top individual shareholders. Conservative activist Robbie Starbuck called out Davila in a video criticizing the company's leadership, calling the recent changes a culmination of a years-long campaign to cater to the far left and abandon the values of its middle America customer base. Starbuck asked in the video, what qualified him for this board seat? Well, you see, he's owned a DEI consulting and strategy firm for 15 years that focuses on pushing DEI and DEI advertising, unquote. Well, there's a good deal more in this article, but time doesn't permit us to go into it in depth. So I'm going to stop there. If you'd like to read it, it's on Fox Business, August 24th, 2025. Cracker Barrel board member under fire for DEI background after restaurant ditches traditional logo. Now we have a few things from some of our folks up in the Northeast. I mentioned before, I get this little newspaper from a little town in northern Maine, Fort Fairfield. It's called the Fort Fairfield Journal, and it has a lot of good things that are not just local news. It has some local news, too. For example, here's one article in their August 6th edition. Old Orchard Beach police officer arrested by ICE for being in the U.S. illegally. And this is one of the nicest beaches in Maine. Water's cold till pretty much Labor Day, but it's beautiful scenery up there. I went up there many times as a young guy. And it says, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that is ICE, confirmed Monday the arrest of a Jamaican national who was illegally living in the United States while working as a police officer in Maine for the Old Orchard Beach Police Department. John Luke Evans, a Jamaican citizen who overstayed his visa last year, was arrested by ICE Boston after allegedly attempting to purchase a firearm, an act that triggered a red flag with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, the ATF. The story, first reported by Bill Malugin of Fox News, was confirmed by Patricia Hyde, field office director for ICE Boston. Well, there's a good deal more about this, but that is the gist of the matter. And just to read another comment or two, and this, by the way, was by Steve Robinson. He was the author of the article. It says, shockingly, and Ms. Hyde, what was her name again? Patricia Hyde, field office director for ICE Boston, said, shockingly, Evans was employed as a local law enforcement officer. The fact that the police department would hire an illegal alien and unlawfully issue him a firearm while on duty would be comical if it weren't so tragical. All right, we'll leave that there for the time being. Another little thing, Union, Maine. That's a tiny place, I think. Don't believe I've ever heard of it. I'm sure it's a nice place. The headline here from the Fort Fairfield Journal, August 6th, says, Border Patrol agents arrest confirmed gang member in Maine. Well, you would think Maine, way up there in the Northeast, would be free of all this, but no, no, no. Says U.S. Border Patrol agents arrested a Colombian national and confirmed member of the South American Theft Group in Union, Maine, on Wednesday, July 30th, 2025. The individual was found to be illegally present in the United States. Well, can't get away from McKinley if we go up the bank. And there's some other good articles. I'll just read a couple of headlines here. Sorry, Grandma. Solar scam gives Mainers biggest energy price increase in the nation. And it says your grandparents are going to have to cut back on their out-of-control spending on things like prescription drugs and bingo nights, because the Maine legislature's scheme to spike electricity rates as a sneaky way of power is working. Maine's already high residential electricity costs increased more than every other state in the U.S. from May 2024 to May 2025, according to new figures from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Okay. And according to Axios, means year-over-year increase in electricity costs amounted to, guess this, a 36.3% increase, an increase that nearly doubled the next largest increase in the state of Connecticut. Well, those left-wingers, including the governor of Maine, must have their solar power, no matter what it costs the citizens. Okay, then our intrepid contact in the great state of Massachusetts, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, sent me a bunch of things, which I had about 4 or 5 hours to go through some of these. One of them has to do with a certain, where did I have that one? Oh, yes, Sheriff of Suffolk County, Mr. Duncan, Steve Tompkins, and Howie Carr, the columnist is in the Boston Herald. Steve Tompkins was just trying to put the high back in High Sheriff of Suffolk County, for that is indeed the erstwhile marijuana mogul's official job title, at least for now. He needed cash, apparently, because last year the High Sheriff only pocketed $215,430, including $22,626.15 and what the state controller describes as leave buyback. But now he's in trouble with federal authorities on some form of dishonesty. Let's put it that way. Lots of other things we can talk about. Just don't have any more time. I hear the music coming on. I want to thank you all for listening. If you'd like to write to me, it's Luke Gavelin, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com. Good night.